The virus, Cyrus.
Wagwan Bristol, it's Big Gregor's representing Elite Entertainment. You're in tune to the typical tropical afro tropical show. 93.2 FM, BCFM. Shout to my boy Cyrus the Virus. You're doing it large, blood. Keep in tune, yeah? It's all about Cyrus right about now. Okay.
Have you heard? It's a typical topical Afro tropical show. With me, Cyrus the Virus, 93.2 FM, BCFM. I'm back as ever. We got today on the show, we got Tony Gosling. Anything to do with conspiracies, he's our man on point. 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock every single Friday. Yeah, we've got him on our show, Mr. Tony Gosling. We're going to be talking about Haiti, Iran. We got audio from Claire Short yesterday talking about at the Chilcot Inquiry, and our previous Lord God President, Prime Minister Tony Blair. Have you heard John Terry and his infidelity? What about Wayne Bridge, the football player? What about his feelings? What about his emotions? How can he ever be captain of England again? And he's been sexing his best friend's girlfriend. This man we've got coming up has had personal attacks by Combat 18 have been after him. Yes, my listeners, this is the kind of man you need to be listening to. So have your cups of tea, and we're going to be getting down in a little different way in the typical tropical Afro tropical show. Keeping it real, keeping it street, keeping it road. You know how we do. All them man, they're listening down in the Stapleton Road areas. You know how we do our things. If you're easily offended, don't like the truth, you need to switch over now. This is a typical topical Afro tropical show. 4th of February. How's your week been? Mr. Tony Godson, we got in the studio. Hi, Tony. Nice to have you in the place. How are you, sir?
Hi, I'm fine, Cyrus. It's lovely to actually... Thanks very much for inviting me in, because it's nice to have a chance to actually be on the show rather than producing the show as I do on Fridays between 5 and 7. It means I can speak maybe a little bit more freely and openly about some of the things that interest me rather than just simply focusing on doing that week's news, which is what we do every Friday.
Yeah, it's very hard, isn't it? When you, yeah, you, well, you're, you know what? You're free to talk away. Now, I know you've got issues about Claire... Well, what Claire Short was saying about the war inquiry. Shall we start with that first?
I mean, I see myself in a way... I mean, it's might sound silly, but you should close your eyes and imagine that you're a curator of a museum where all you've got in the museum is lots of interesting voices and people saying interesting things throughout history. That's why I see my role, really, which is a collector of interesting and honest statements, because I think so much of what's out in the media today, right from advertising hoardings right the way through to the BBC, is simply promotion by money. And that frustrates me. What I want is just honest people talking about things they really care about, not someone that's been bribed to say something.
Honesty. Very hard to get in this day and age. Very hard to get. And you're talking about honesty. How do you think this inquiry is going? Do you think we're going to get an honest opinion at the end of the day? Or is it going to be money again and position, ranking, status?
Well, point number one is this is not a legal inquiry. None of the people on the panel are lawyers, and it's not being formed in a kind of proper judicial fashion. That is to say, with something like a public inquiry, where, I mean, public inquiries happen when you have multiple deaths, suspicious deaths of some sort, and that's obviously a similar kind of thing to Chilcot. But Chilcot is essentially its own rolling press conference. It's like a press conference that starts every day. So it's kind of rolled out for the press. And of course, there's many, many people who've approached Chilcot who've got intimate knowledge of what they believe is criminal acts at the heart of this Iraq war, which obviously Tony Blair was right at the centre of, and other people around him. But there are people who've approached Chilcot who will not be heard. Chilcot said, no, we don't want to hear what you've got to say. The nice thing about a proper public inquiry...
Well, you're telling us in today in a democratic, just world that people say no? I sit here shocked,
Well,
sir.
I think after Claire Short's testimony yesterday, I think it's pretty clear we don't live in a democratic country and a democratic world.
Well, I watched somebody interview and they were saying, well, basically she's a little traitorous lady because she agreed with the war, and then when it started, she took herself out like she wasn't allowed to change her opinion.
She didn't agree with the war. She was shouted down in cabinet, as we'll hear in a minute, and she had her views marginalised and ignored by the I mean, obviously, the Prime Minister chairs the cabinet discussions. Tony Blair was chairing those meetings, and essentially, he was an appalling chair. He wasn't allowing people to have their say.
Worse than he was a Prime Minister.
Anyway, maybe we can have a little listen now
to
Claire Short's testimony.
The cabinet doesn't work in the way, and didn't under the whole of the time I was in government, in the way that, according to our constitutional theory, it's supposed to work. If ever you raised an issue that you wanted to bring to the cabinet, Tony Blair would see you beforehand and cut it off. I think he misled the cabinet. It certainly misled me, but people let it through.
Sorry, who misled the cabinet?
The Attorney General. I think now we know everything that we know about his doubts and his changes of opinion and what the Foreign Office legal advisers were saying, and that he'd got this private side deal that Tony Blair said there was a material breach when Blix was saying he needed more time. I think for the Attorney General to come and say there's an unequivocal legal authority to go to war was misleading. I see that both Tony Blair and he said the cabinet were given the chance to ask questions. That is untrue. And I said, well, that's extraordinary. Why is it so late? Did you change your mind? And they all said, Claire, stop. I mean, everything was very fraught by then, and they didn't want me arguing. And I was kind of jeered at to be quiet. And that's what happened.
So you went quiet?
Well, if he won't answer and the Prime Minister's saying be quiet and that's it, no discussion, there's only so much you can do. When you add secrecy and deceit, the system becomes positively dangerous. And I'm still shocked that Britain could do what happened in Iraq. And it makes me fear for our government system. And we need to learn the lessons so that it can never malfunction so dreadfully again.
I'd like to thank our witness this morning.
Claire Short left the hearing room to a round of applause from the public gallery.
Claire Short there yesterday then at the Chilcot. So That was amazing stuff.
Well, I mean, she's saying there very clearly that she's very fearful for the democratic system. She's saying that when important decisions that relate to the future of the country are being discussed, that there is no proper discussion. In fact, she was saying there was no discussion about the Iraq war.
Absolutely no discussion. Well, basically, when you look at George Bush, and they kind of had it in their mind when September 11 was going on, what they was actually going to do.
I just think it's frightening that we can end up with people in such powerful positions as Tony Blair, who are, you know, chairing meetings where actually it's an authoritarian meeting. Someone has already decided what the outcome's going to be, and it's done as a kind of just paying lip service to the idea of democracy.
Yeah, so I'm this is the point I'm getting to. You say that, and I think basically a lot of people on the street today can actually see this with the access of with the internet. How can you expect other countries, like they're talking about weapons of mass destruction now in Iran, why would we believe these people? Why? Blatant lies. Why? All them people that have died in Iraq, here and abroad, that have died through this, why would we believe them?
Well, I don't think most people do believe them.
No,
I mean,
they don't.
You know, the fact is, when it came, when in the run-up to the Iraq war, it was very clear to me that, and it was clear to the British public generally, and that's why we had the biggest demonstration there's ever been in the history of this nation. The British Isles, we had between 2 and 3 million people decided one Sunday or Saturday to get on a coach and go to London to demonstrate against the war. So if the people could see it, why couldn't the politicians? I think what's happened essentially is we've got a political system that's been circled by the big money people, the powers that be.
Powers that be. And
which we could say the secret establishment, the secret government, the parallel government. It's been circled by these people, encircled. And there is really very little connection between the way that decisions are made in this country and the ordinary people. And it's not surprising that people are thinking, well, what's the point in me voting?
Is there a point to voting?
Well, one of the things that's quite interesting to see is the government just coming up with this idea of having a system of, I think it's called a transferable vote system, but improving the voting system, which is what they're now talking about over the last few days. Now, that's definitely a positive move, because the way that our first-past-the-post voting system works is it keeps in power the traditional establishment parties. You know, Labour, Liberal, Conservative always gain from the, not so much the Liberals, but the two main parties always gain from the first-past-the-post system, because what happens is people vote for the party they think is the most powerful, because otherwise their vote is wasted. What's a much better system is where every vote is counted. You know, we need a voting system where people's votes aren't wasted, otherwise it's not really democracy.
Well, they like not having democracy in this country. Let's go to war. What about Iran, Tony? Do you think they're going to be going to war with Iran?
Well, who is they?
Exactly, these secret powers, the Americans, the Zionists.
I think
the people
who are really leading the charges against Iran are, I think it's almost certainly the Israelis, because they are the people who are much closer than anybody else to Iran. And I think what they're doing is they're kind of bringing the other Western nations along with them, almost daring us to say, well, look, hang on, we're your friends in the Middle East. And if we say that the Iranians are no good, you better say so too. But then one of the things that people got to understand is there's lots of lobbying networks in the West, in particularly in Britain and other European countries and the United States. I mean, the idea that our foreign policy, because this is what this amounts to, this is Britain's foreign policy vis-a-vis Iran, is not decided by the Foreign Office anymore. The Foreign Office is the Foreign Secretary and all the people who are experts and intelligence gatherers and all the diplomatic staff don't make these decisions. A lot of these decisions are made outside of government completely amongst lobby groups. And I'll tell you about two lobby groups particularly. One in the United States called the Council on Foreign Relations, and very often you'll see someone pop up on the telly on Channel 4 News or Newsnight from the Council on Foreign Relations. And you look at that and you think, well, that sounds like some sort of talking shop where there's a free and open discussion about foreign policy. Actually, it's not the case at all. It's a private club.
What?
Yeah, it's a private club. The Council on Foreign Relations.
Do they let black people join?
Well, they may do if they're singing from the same hymn sheet. Because essentially these people are elitists. the Council on Foreign Relations and
Roger,
the
you
Royal,
need to get yourself down there.
The Royal Institute for International Affairs in London, which is Chatham House,
yeah,
just near Piccadilly. That is a very similar thing in Britain. So what they do is they put themselves forward with a fantastic amount of financial backing as the people that go into in-depth foreign affairs. And they will be advising the Foreign Office. They'll be advising the Prime Minister. They'll be advising the government, the cabinet, the Defence Secretary, etc.
So they've actually got a vested interest in the advice that they're actually giving.
Well, of course they have, because they're funded by industry and by the bankers. So they're very sophisticated organisation, because they come across as quite balanced. But behind the scenes, they've got very, should we say, globalist views. They believe that there should be a world government of some sort.
Balanced like Henry Kissinger. We're going to go into a song. We're going to come back with more Tony later on. Well, when I say later on, about 3 minutes, we're going to go into a song. I think it's kind of apt for this tune in the Tony Blair government, and could be apt for the Gordon Brown government. Guiltiness.
Me and Marley's kid. Pushing Ninja 600s, never Harley's kid. Laying it down. Mr. Chief Stevie-O, my man Julian and Amy, you know how these things flow. Keeping dry mills for the G-A-double-T-O, yo, yo.
Guiltiness, rest on their conscience, oh yeah.
Basically.
Oh yeah.
Come on.
And they live a life.
They live a life.
A false pretense.
Plus, we living in the worst conditions. A generation hooked on welfare, nobody cares. We representing drugs and violence. A shoddy clears the street out. We had to parties bringing heat out. I'm trying to grip my life on layback and kick my feet out, no doubt. Sacrifice and need to feed my kid and wife. There's many things that we neglect, like we forgot how to respect life. Yo,
and they live a life of false pretense.
For us caught up in the struggle, to single moms who got the kids and plus the job to juggle. For those that listen, grab petitions and them hooks to get their vote on. The world is spinning, praise the Lord is still sinning. Prevent from being murdered, that's what we learned in the beginning. You keep blowing, knowing somebody needs you, but never bite the hand that feeds you.
Guiltiness, rest on their conscience, oh yeah.
Guiltiness there by the Mighty Brothers. We're back, black on track with Tony Gosling and Secret Societies. And there's a few secret societies that we need to get to the bottom of. And we're going to have a little snout around, not like a pig, because we stay away from the bacon on this show. We do. Tony, what do you know? We talk about secret societies. Have you heard anything about the Black Illuminati? There's a lot of that going on. I don't know if you've heard of Professor Griff. He's talking about Jennifer Hudson, Jay-Z, his wife, Beyonce. They're all meant to be part of this new Black Illuminati billionaires club. I don't know if you've heard.
The Illuminati are, I would just ask listeners to get hold of their dictionary and open it up and see if the Illuminati is in their dictionary, because many people nowadays say this is a fictional organisation. It clearly isn't. Certainly wasn't back in the late 1700s.
Because, no, it certainly wasn't.
Because it was a massive scandal at the time. I mean, obviously, it's been forgotten about to quite a large extent. But there are some amazing source material on the Illuminati from the late 1700s. And there's a guy called John Robison, who wrote what is absolutely the best book on it, no doubt, because he did a very, very comprehensive job. He was an engineer himself, and he was a close friend of James Watt, the inventor of the steam engine, and also the secretary of the Royal Society in Edinburgh. And he decided he was going to devote a year of his life to examining this organisation, translating leaks from their own papers that had been made in French and German, mm-hmm. and other languages, and in English. And he wrote up a book called The Proofs of a Conspiracy Against All the Religions and Governments in Europe. Now, quite whether there is such a thing as the Illuminati today is another question. And I think, you know, maybe that we can examine the evidence for these people you're talking about and whether they really are part of something called the Illuminati. But one of the things the Illuminati said is we will never appear under our own name. We always use another organisation. And I would suggest that the organisations I was talking about before, things like the Council on Foreign Relations and the Royal Institute for International Affairs, do fit that bill, because they have secret hidden agendas. And they are very, very powerful. They're influencing foreign policy to an extent where, at the end of the day, the foreign secretary has hardly got a look. Hardly gets a look in.
Well, I should imagine if you've got a lobbying party of say 25 billionaires in there, they're going to be very powerful.
Well, of course, they also lobby for their man to be made foreign secretary.
Exactly.
So democracy is not entirely dead, but it seems to be being slowly strangled. Okay, so one thing which does certainly look like it might be connected back to the Illuminati is this American secret society at Yale University, which is based on the campus at Yale on something called the Tomb. And this society is called the Skull and Bones.
Have you seen that, peeps? That's been on television as well. They've made films on that.
They have. And one of the things with big scandals, exposés that came out about 5-6 years ago in the previous US presidential elections, was that both John Kerry for the Democratic Party and George W. Bush for the Republicans were both members of this secret society called the Order of the Skull and Bones. And we wouldn't know much about this order except that some very plucky students at Yale decided about 60-70 years ago, this has been going back a long way, and apparently the Skull and Bones was established by money from the heroin trade. The Russell Trust had been trading heroin with the Far East, and they used this money to set up this organisation. And I think it's a fascinating thing to actually see. You can go on the internet and have a look at their tomb, but what happened was the students broke in to the tomb. And they went right round and did a survey of what was inside there. It was very spooky. Human skulls in there, this kind of thing, and big occult symbols on the wall. So we wouldn't know so much about this organisation if it wasn't for an Englishman who was actually over at the Hoover Institute in the US and at Stanford University, and his name's Anthony Sutton. And he wrote a book, which I've got here, I'm waving in front of you, called America's Secret Establishment.
And we've actually got some audio from Anthony Sutton, haven't we? I do believe. And Anthony's, lucky for us, passed away, so.
Please tell us about the Order and how you came to discover it exists.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here. The Order is truly a secret society. It was founded in the United States at Yale University in 1833. It has continued and exists down to the present day. Each year, the Order takes in 15 men, senior students from Yale University. Never more than 15, only once has it been less than 15. In 1946, they took in, I think, 10 rather than 15 members. So what we have is a secret society which, over the last 150 years, has accumulated about 2,500 members, of whom perhaps 500 are alive today. Of this 500, perhaps 100 are actively in pursuit of the objectives of the order. It's not another college fraternal society. Yale University is the only university in the United States, or indeed the world, which has senior societies. These are societies where the 15 are selected in the junior year and actually are initiated at the beginning of the senior year. They stay on campus only 1 year as members. They are called knights. When they graduate, they leave the university, they go out into the world, then they're known as patriarchs. So at any one time, you only have 15 knights in existence, and for the rest of their lives, they're known as patriarchs. And they work during their lifetime, or a number do, towards the ends of the order. They are pretty much guaranteed success. Certainly they're guaranteed financial success. And in my reading of the material I have, I infer that so long as they go along with the purposes of the order, so long as they gear their careers and their lives towards certain ends, then they are guaranteed success. How did I come to this knowledge? Well, up to 6 months ago, I denied that there was a conspiracy, because frankly, I couldn't prove one. I suspected a conspiracy, but I couldn't prove there was one until 6 months ago. Well, a little before 6 months ago, I received the catalog, which is the membership list of the society, all the way back to 1833, and I received some of their internal documents, enough for me to put together the way they correspond with each other, the operations within the order, to some extent their problems, and to some extent their objectives.
Now this is the book, An Introduction to the Order, by Anthony C. Sutton. It has a skull and bones on the front and 322.
The 322 is an identification. The order has a temple on the Yale campus. A temple, yes. It's a building, maybe this 50, 60 feet by 40 feet, maybe 40 feet high. There's no windows, two big steel doors. We know what the temple looks like because back in 1880s, a number of Yale students became a little unhappy about what was going on inside this temple. When they went by it at midnight, sometimes they heard strange noises and all kinds of rumors on the Yale campus as to what this might be. There was a break-in. I call it the Yale Gate. there was a break-in to the temple, and the students who broke in cataloged what they found, and they made a drawing, a design of the interior of the temple. And three of the rooms are numbered. One is 322, one is 323, and one is 324. 322 is also, I suspect, the chapter number. And also in correspondence between members, they conclude their correspondence, where you and I would conclude yours truly or yours sincerely, they conclude yours in 322. Why 322? There are several theories for this. One is that the order originated with Demosthenes, the Greek, in 322 BC. That's one theory. Another one is that it stems from the founding date in the United States, which was 1832, so really we have the last two numbers, 32, the second chapter of founded in 1832. The skull and crossbones are prominent in their
in their salmoners, initiation salmoners.
This is a symbol of death. Now, why would they take a symbol of death?
Yes, from what I understand, when a new member is initiated, that would be in the senior year at Yale, he's placed within a coffin.
Oh, my.
And now, we only know this from the Yale Gate papers. These, I call it Yale Gate. And from the photographs we have of members inside the temple, many of these photographs are the 15 sitting around a table, and they have the skull and the crossbones sitting on the table in front of them. It is the symbol of death, and it has been called the Brotherhood of Death, and I think it probably more adequately should be called the Brotherhood of Death. So what I've had to do is look at the history, the biographies of the leading members of the order, and reconstruct their career and see if there's a common pattern in their careers. While doing that, I came across some interesting documents. Some members apparently are not too happy once they become involved with us after 10 or 20 years. One member in particular left a memorandum. He wrote it in 1932. He was buried away in his papers. I don't think anybody found it before I did. And it was a six-page memorandum on the order, naming some of the members, and said it was the most sordid thing ever happened in the history of man. So, but to come back to my point, I have to reconstruct the objectives. What are the objectives? In the words of one member, might is right. If you have the power, you use it to achieve your objectives. What is the objective? As you look at the histories of individual members, it can only be one thing: to acquire power, to keep power, to use power for their own purposes.
And that's Far Away From God. Typical, topical, Afro-tropical. A little different slant on the show this week to show that we can do the in-depth conversations and debates. It's me, Sarsifras, with the man himself, Tony Gosling. We've got a track coming up by Maria, and she's from Manchester. Sent it down, starting out on the long road of fame. We're all prone to mistakes, but not as many as Tony Blair, mates. Sounds of Maria there, Oh my goodness, on the typical tropical Afro tropical show Thursday afternoon. I hope you're enjoying the show, peeps. 93.2 FM, your voice, your choice, keeping it black, keeping it real. www.bcfm.org.uk. As if you want to get in touch with us on the internet. I'm going to go a quick Haiti. Haiti earthquake appeal, and that's being sponsored by Signpost and Right Direction. And there's a sponsored skydive coming up on the 13th of the 3rd 2010. All the proceeds are going to go to the Haiti disaster appeal, and you can take part in this if you go down by the King's Head Pub, Whitehall. There's a quiz night going on, and that's this month on the 30th of Jan. No, that's past. LeBec's this week, or next week. LeBec's Eastern Karaoke Night, Sunday, that's 7th of February, that's at 7:30. So you get yourself down there and take part and join in. And talking about Haiti, we've got Mr. Tony Gosling in the studio. And I do believe there's oil there in the land, Tony.
Well, that's funny. We were just talking about America's secret establishment, weren't we?
We were talking about, yes.
And isn't it interesting how the US response to the earthquake has been essentially what amounts to an invasion?
Over 60,000 troops.
Why are they sending soldiers, armed soldiers, and why are we seeing a situation now? I mean, I think for the first time last week, where you've actually got literally clashes between soldiers and desperate civilians. Now, this is not the way to deal with that sort of earthquake and that kind of humanitarian crisis.
And it makes
what they need is hospitals, what they need is drugs to help, and what they need is expert attention, which is what most of the world has been sending there. But only trouble is they've had trouble landing and getting in because the Americans have got the airbase, which is crowded with military transport.
Conquered it, basically, because that's because it's a takeover, Tony.
Just at the beginning of last week, there was a revelation that actually for about 20 years, the US has known that there are vast oil deposits just off the coast near Port-au-Prince. So this is something which up until the earthquake was not known about. Haiti wasn't thought about by anybody apart from the US as a source of oil. Now we've discovered that there is actually a massive oil field just off the coast there. And this seems to be potentially another reason why the Americans are so interested in controlling the place. Of course, let's not forget the democratically elected president of Haiti, Mr. Aristide, and he is actually in. There's been very little talk about this as part of the coverage by the media.
We haven't actually seen him on television. Well, you
won't. No.
Where's the Prime Minister or President?
The President is in exile in South Africa. Originally, he was in exile in Cuba. He was elected about 4 years ago, but taken out by the Americans and put into Cuba originally. But then they decided that Cuba was a bit too close to Haiti and that he might influence Haiti more from Cuba. So he was then taken out to South Africa, and he's been talking a little bit in South Africa. But basically, it's been ignored by the Western NATO zone media. Most of the NATO countries have just ignored the fact that the president is in South Africa and it obviously is desperately wants to get back there to help the recovery, but he can't because he's not being allowed back by the US.
I actually heard, I don't know how true it is, that maybe it wasn't actually an earthquake. There might have been underwater bombs going off.
Well, normally I would say you're a crazy person to say that, but in this case, I think there actually is a justification for it. If you check out what the Russians are saying. The Russians are you and I are not in a position to know whether the Americans or anybody else has got such a thing as an earthquake bomb. But the other powers in the world, for example, the Russians and the Chinese are, because they take a great interest in the weapons capabilities of their potential enemies. And the Russians have come out and said that they believe it's entirely possible that this was some kind of earthquake bomb that caused this. Now, at the moment, we've no idea whether it was or whether it wasn't, but it certainly was, shall we say, convenient for the US. If, as I think, their real objective there is oil, this is a great excuse. The earthquake is a great excuse for them to come in and basically take over Haiti.
It's a take over, and it's so great as well, because basically, when you rebuild it, you're building from the bottom, you can lay your pipelines down. Didn't say pipelines, did I? Well, maybe you can lay your pipes down. Brand new infrastructure. There. They've got. It's a takeover. They've got the.
The unfortunate thing is, of course, that if it is developed for oil in the future, which it looks like it will be now, the local people will see none of that wealth.
And that's all right, Tom. As black people, we're used to missing out. But carry on.
Well,
we don't mind.
Well, what happens, of course, is that the big oil companies come in and take these franchises to extract the oil over, and very often this is the whole deal. Is look, these companies, they come in and they say, well, it's not worth us drilling for this oil unless we get, say, shall we say, 99% of the profits from it. So then they use that as a bargaining chip and bargain down the amount that the local people, who are essentially the owners of the oil, get out of it. So it's a bullying tactic. That's why they've got so many soldiers over there.
The Americans bullying us in our own lands. Oil in Haiti. Whether the West... It's going to affect the OPEC industry. That'd be interesting, seeing Chavez and Obama, if there is oil there.
Well, the important things about Haiti is that it was one of the very first ever slave uprisings. So I think it's seen by those that want to control the world as a very good place to take over. They don't like the idea, and they like to occupy anywhere which might be a centre for resistance against corporate power and against, you know, sort of authoritarian governments, totalitarian governments. And of course, that happened in Haiti before anywhere else.
And it could happen again. It could happen again.
It's a place that they don't want this to ever happen again. So they're destabilising it over the years, using it as a place to run drugs from South America through to Miami and Florida and the rest of the US and the rest of the Western world. And at the end of the day, Haiti is a really deserving cause with all the charities that are helping out there, because they are going round the Americans.
Yeah.
The Marines who are there. I mean, what are they doing there with the soldiers? I just don't understand it.
You know, they don't need bullets. They don't need guns. All right, I understand. I saw them actually taking food back up off of the street and putting them back on the trucks because they're saying people wouldn't line up.
Well, another one of the really suspicious things that's been going on there, as has been in the news the last few days, Cyrus, is this whole load of so-called orphans being taken out of the country.
Yes, what's that about?
Now, that would have happened without the West and the British people or anyone else ever finding out about it, if it wasn't just by a chance question by a journalist that happened to see these youngsters being kind of shepherded along. And he said to one of them, oh, where are you going? He was talking to the children rather than to the people who were supervising them. And although the supervisors were saying that they were orphans, some of the children were actually crying because they didn't want to be taken away. And that actually, they weren't orphans. Their parents were around.
Yes, no one had actually checked for them.
It looks to me like a rather cynical case of child abduction. So, but we'll see how it plays out, because there's also some theories saying that they were just going to the Dominican Republic. They weren't actually going to the US. But it looks extremely suspicious.
Adults with little children hidden under the seats. What? They didn't have the paperwork. What right did they have to have them there? You can't just go and take them because there's been a disaster going on. You have to find out whether their family are alive, their extended family are alive. You know,
the frightening thing is that if it wasn't just for this chance journalist asking this chance question, those children would have been out of the country by now, probably in the US or somewhere like that.
Somewhere in the US, or in a paedophile ring, or even down in a secret society as a sacrificial blood oath.
Well, who knows where they could have gone. There's certainly questions over whether they would have been safe where they went.
We've got more with Tony Gosling. You know, it's on the first afternoon. We've got 15 minutes of the show left. We still got more debate, more news and views, typical, topical, Afro-tropical, and great music. See if you can feel the vibe on this one for all them soul heads out there. This is Bonnie and Clyde, Since You've Been Gone.
Yeah. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I got a note from the underground. Your name's on top, like you're feeling down. I will be there when you need me, boo. Justice is failed and mistaking you. Six, it was you and I.
sometimes we come back again.
Oh, how I miss you.
Oh,
since you've gone away.
Oh, oh.
Miss you since you've gone away.
You about the difference between radio stations. You remember 93.2 FM. So this is the difference. That's how we're doing it on the typical topical Afro tropical show. Mikey D. Carl up in Seneca. Jay up in Seneca. Gary up in Seneca. Charmaine down in Greenbank. Desi Rankin. Catch him every Saturday. And to my brethren, B.I.G. Fagan, Big Daddy Fagan. So we're doing it on the typical topical Bonnie and Clyde since you've gone away. And now we're going to be talking about the dark forces that are out there, that surround us. The Matrix. Is our government a dark force, Tone?
Well, I think the government is a battleground. Many places are battlegrounds between the forces of darkness and the forces of light. This is something I believe. I mean, many people out there may say, well, they don't really believe in spiritual things. They don't believe in a kind of parallel world, a spirit world of any sort. But actually, I do. And I think, if you look closely at this, some of this stuff to do with the supernatural, it's very difficult to deny it. One thing that that will make you take this seriously is if you anybody out there ever has an experience themselves of something to do with the supernatural, which I've done two or three times, things that I just simply can't explain by anything other than this is either an act of God or something different, because it is there is such a thing as a supernatural.
Well, as a Muslim and in the Quran, it addresses us all the time as Al-Amin, mankind and jinn. The jinn being the spirit world, they come from a smokeless fire, and they're very infinite, and they live amongst us. But we can't see them; that they can see us. And God actually says this is going to be one of the biggest things, traumatic things on the Day of Judgment. Because like poltergeists, because they say these are the young spirit entities, which they're jinn just messing with people, they will have their sight taken away, and we will be given our full sight, and we'll be able to see them and their animals. And some of them are very, very ugly. And they say that the devil, he is from the jinn family. He's a jinn. And there's meant to be three types of jinn. Flying ones, static ones, and one that sliver. And he's a very powerful one. And he's from he's an ifrit. That's what they call it, ifrit. And the ifrit jinns there was Solomon had control over them. He had actual control over them. And that's how they got the Queen of Sheba's throne which was in Yemen at the time, and they were sun worshippers all the way to, I think, to around the Syrian area Jerusalem, where Solomon was. And it was a Fritz said, "My Lord, I will get." That's how we know they move fast. He says, "I will get the throne of Sheba before you rise off your throne, or within the twinkling of an eye." And before King Solomon risen from his throne, her throne was beside him. So we actually know there's not so much known about these entities, but they can move fast and they can take different shapes.
It sounds like a sort of telekinesis or something.
It sounds like, and they have powers, and they also actually work with soothsayers. They used to go up to the heavens, and God says, "This is what you see shooting stars are actually missiles to hit them." They have similar powers to angels, but angels don't have free will. But the jinn have free will, so they can. That's why they're going to get judged the same as us, because they.
No, I think the angels do have free will.
No, the angels don't have free will.
Yeah, because they chose to be with God before in the book of Genesis. If you go back there, Well, but anyway, look, let me just say something about one of the things I think is important. This is about people and individuals and how sometimes they can sell themselves out. You know, like we hear often about bands that do fantastic music at the start of their careers and then they sell out.
Did you hear
this, Jace? This is something I think is really important to understand. That certainly in the Bible, it talks about something called sinning against the Holy Spirit. That is to say, you make a conscious decision in your heart to work for your own personal gain rather than as part of the community. And that is essentially saying, basically denying what you're put here on earth to do. That is to serve and to be a good person and to make the world a better place and to leave it a better place if you can. So sinning against the Holy Spirit in the Bible is a really important thing. And I think there are some individuals who've made that choice, that they're actually only interested in their or their own secret society's objectives and not in the wider good of the community.
We hear Rihanna, we've heard Jennifer Hudson, we've heard P. Diddy. These are names that have been banned out in the black community that have actually sold out participated in blood sacrifice. And this is, you can catch all this on YouTube if you're interested, people. Professor Griff actually talks about this a lot, and there's other stuff. An American man does pretty much like you do, Tony. It talks about the City of Owls quickly. While I still got you here, Mr. Gosling,
yeah,
got to talk about the biggest Christmas that's going about 9/11. What happened there?
Well, I think that the
Osama bin Laden.
Although at the time we were sold quite convincingly this story about Osama bin Laden in a cave, managing it all. I think with the benefit of hindsight, and also looking at some of the excellent films there are, haven't been actually broadcast on the mainstream broadcasters because for whatever reason they don't want to let the public see this.
Could you give some of the sites?
Well, there's one of the best films I've seen is called 9/11 Mysteries, which is made by people who are connected to the families of people that died. That's a very good examination of some of the big questions around 9/11. There's also Loose Change, made by a guy who was a teenager when he made it, Dylan Avery in the US. And those you can just sort of look at Google Video or wherever. But they haven't been shown on mainstream television in the US or in the UK, which is a great pity because, you know, it exposes the basic problems with September the 11th, which is how, from a cave in Afghanistan, does Osama bin Laden close down the US air defences? The most sophisticated air defence system, NORAD, in the world. Now, you might say, well, these planes were civilian airliners. But it's well understood that civilian airliners can be hijacked and may be flown into buildings. So that's part of the air defence system. And I think that's, for me, is one of the main pointers towards looking further at the 9/11 attacks and who was behind them. Because the motive, I think, was simply that the Americans had already decided they wanted a war because they could see their economy collapsing. They wanted to expand, grab resources.
Are you actually saying here on the typical topical Afro-tropical show they killed their own people?
Well, I don't... How can you say this? Yes, I think there was certainly collusion and help from within the American military and the government. Quite whether it was actually planned in the US is another question. I think the most likely people to have planned the September the 11th attack is not bin Laden, it's Blackwater. It's these private military companies that boast on their websites about nuclear war fighting. If you want to fight a nuclear war, come to us. We are the best guys to do it. And Blackwater, who now have their own navy, are making a fantastic amount of money out of Iraq, and potentially in the future Iran, right.
Certainly in Afghanistan.
As the regular troops withdraw, so in goes Blackwater and all the mercenaries.
Exactly.
So they've obviously their own financial benefit has been massive from September the 11th. So why is it impossible for it to have been planned secretly by a kind of mafia within the American government and the military in conjunction with the arms industry? I think that's probably the most likely source of the actual September the 11th attacks themselves.
Powerful stuff here on the typical topical Afro-tropical show. You can catch Tony Godson, your show's on at...
Well, it's on between 5 and 7 every Friday. We do a review of the week's news and then we look at, closely at one particular subject each week.
And what's your subject going to be this week, Tony?
This week we've got a guy called Jerry Coulter coming in, and he's a investigator of the Freemasons. He's somebody who was a victim of the Freemasons, so a crime which was perpetrated within a Masonic lodge secretly, between a garage owner and a policeman who was supposed to be investigating car theft. And he eventually was successful. Basically, picked on the wrong guy. Jerry's a karate instructor. He's very into his martial arts, very mentally disciplined. And he will be talking about that further on the show this Friday between 6 and 7.
Well, I'm sure the BCFM listeners look forward to that.
There are a lot of people out there who talk about Freemasons in rather a balmy way, but Jerry's not definitely not one of them.
No balmy ways talking about the Freemasons. And they used to be known as the Knights Templars, and they was kicked out of France before that and they end up in Scotland, and it all goes way back to the Pharaoh.
And all this stuff between the forces of darkness and the forces of light we were talking about earlier, I think it's fair to say that these battles are going on within the Freemasons too. There are decent Freemasons fighting bad Freemasons and people with evil intent in the hope that they can keep it all secret within the lodge.
And you know what? This is the end of the typical topical Afro-tropical show for all the people out there. We're going to be going out with a force for good, a force for niceness, a force for love. Dennis and Garnet Silk.
Praise unto the Most High Jah, Rastafari, Haile Selassie the First, for giving I and I this great and wonderful privilege to come together in love and perfect unity. Brother Dennis Brown and the Silky One say, oh, there say King.
Keep the fire blazing for Jaro, yeah.
Brother Dennis Brown, love you from the heart, yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Dennis said to Garnet, come and sing with me, my brother man, yeah, yeah. I said I could not resist such wonderful invitation, no.
Oh, oh, oh.
Then he said to Garnet, come and sing with me, my brother man.